He's a Lakers fan. Let's see if he's affected by the flipping of the team. It's Will Hill, everybody, the host of the Should Have Bet More podcast, where you can access wherever you get your podcasts. He does three of them a week. And as everybody learned last week at Bet Bash, his arms are bigger than yours. Will, good morning.
Boys, what's going on? Yeah, what a surprising bit of news that is to a it's nice a year and you just pick up $2.5 billion. That's a nice little scoop. I did see Walter, I guess, reportedly had a stroke not too long ago, so maybe that's related to it, where he just wants less off of his plate.
Yeah,
I know some people a little snarky on Twitter saying, "Wow, you know, you can't sign these guys for $70 million and defer 69 of it like you do in Major League Baseball." So they just got out when it was too tough, but. We'll see here. That is very, very surprising news to say the least.
Health issues will obviously change your plans. That's for sure. All right, Will, let's start with Major League Baseball. You have jumped on the Tigers as well in a certain way. How are you playing them?
First off, I like them today. I think this is a playable number at home with Valdez on the mound against Foster Griffin. Little negative regression, I think, in the cards here for Griffin, who was traded over from the Nationals a couple of weeks ago at the deadline. And just playing the hot hand, the better lineup. I think the pitching match is a bit of a wash. I'm going to play Detroit here today for the game. And, boy, I think they're getting in the playoffs. Now, do you want to go plus 250 division? You've certainly missed some much larger, some much fatter prices. But you know what? You got to play the ball where it lies. It's you're also a few games closer than you've been. And that was something you and I were texting about last week. Odds to get the sixth seed. I kind of like Baltimore 8-1. You said, man, if I had to bet anything, I'd bet Detroit at 14-1. That 14 is no longer there. Yeah. It's still plus 800. If you think Yankees and the Red Sox pencil them in at 4-5, the sixth spot is where the last wild card. I mean, the sixth spot is always where the last wild card comes from, but that's the spot that's open. Detroit at plus 800. I think that's, again, you've missed the best numbers, but got to play where it lies. I don't think that's a bad bet, but I think plus 155 to make the playoffs, where you're still getting plus money and you don't pick the wrong one. Well, I picked them to win the division. They got the wild card or vice versa. So I think you could play around with the numbers and find the bet you like, but I'll just call it plus 155 to make the playoffs. I think they're getting in. That lineup was not affected by the Skubal and Mize trade. And you've got Framber Valdez, you've got Troy Melton, and you've got Jackson Jobe, who was a third or fourth pick in the draft. They still got plenty of talent. Those other teams do not scare me at all. The White Sox, you just keep waiting for that other shoe to drop. They have not played great the last couple of weeks. So I think it's going to be Detroit, and I wouldn't be surprised if they won the division.
Yeah. I said those words exactly when I was talking about them for August, which is Skubal trade or Mize or whatever doesn't affect their expected weighted on base offense, which is fifth in all of baseball. The fact that they have a plus, I'll say it again, it's just incredible. A plus 89 run differential.
Insane.
Is insane. One game below 500. And what that means essentially is that they ought to be, you know, someone like 10 games above 500. Like that's really the type of baseball team they are. Now, part of that 10 above had to do with Skubal and Mize, but you get the idea. It's a far better baseball team than was reflected in their record. And that obviously informs many of these bets as well. Your Yankees. This is, again, we're talking to a guy who is let's give you the Will Hill resume.
Oh, come on.
He's a Yankees fan. He's a Lakers fan. And then just to throw us off a little, instead of being a Cowboys fan, he's like, okay, I'll be a Vikings fan. Maybe it'll take him off the scent.
Well, quarterback news.
Oh, yes. We'll get to that. Your Yankees against the Mariners tonight. Yankees are a pretty small favorite. You playing them?
I like the under 8.5 here. I don't think you can go wrong here until the Yankees get back on track or just back healthier offensively playing the unders, because it's a good pitching staff. It's a good bullpen, even though you look at the numbers, it's one of the better bullpens in baseball. It doesn't feel like that. It doesn't feel like when Boone goes to the bullpen, you got many guys as a Yankee fan that you trust or you like. You know, Duvall was a disaster. Thanks for him, Gilly, by the way. We got him out of there.
You're very welcome.
Bednar's been pretty good. There's not many guys you trust, but Mariners can't really hit either, so Yankees a neuter lineup, and I actually like the new look lineup with Lombard, Spencer Jones. There's a little more life, a little more youth. Anytime you bring up a young player, especially one that's athletic with some speed, it gives your team a little jolt. But man, getting to 4 or 5 runs for them is an absolute chore, and they got good pitching. Mariners can't hit, so under 8.5, I think unders on Yankees until further notice is probably a good way to play it. So I'm playing the under 8.5 here tonight.
But you agree with the premise though, that once they are at full strength, and specifically with Judge, aren't they the best team in the American League, though, at that point? Especially in a playoffs where you can throw somebody into the bullpen like Warren.
Yes, but that doesn't mean, I mean, they are the favorite by the betting odds. First off, just penciling Judge in, all right, let's say he's back. He's been out a while. It's going to sound like, it sounds like they're going to have to really thread the needle of not bringing him back too soon and getting re-injured, but having enough rehab time and ramp up time. Remember, he hasn't been doing much. He hasn't been cleared for activity. So I don't know if he's like lifting weights, swinging a bat. To just expect him to just start hitting 100 miles an hour fastball in the bleachers like we expect Aaron Judge to, that's delicate. And they're probably going to have to go through the wild card round, the best two out of three. So all of those obstacles, I would say I'm certainly not betting on them at that price, but they, I mean, that's a loaded team with Schwitler, Fried, and Cole, yeah, and a healthy version of that lineup. That's the best team, but those obstacles that I mentioned are real.
Yeah, they are, but let's put it this way. So I know I said before, so the Tigers, again, based on Pythag, run differential, in other words, plus 89, the best in the American League. I said that they should be 10 games above 500. That's not what I spoke incorrectly. They should be 10 games better than they are, which means that they should be 19 games above 500, right? Instead of 59 and 60, they should be 69 and 50. Like, that's how good the Tigers ought to be. And that's exactly the record that the Yankees ought to be, which is almost exactly what the Yankees record actually is. The difference is, you just pointed out, I still can't get past that starting pitching difference now without Scooble and without Mize would be, as you said, Fried, Schlittler, I don't know, Cole, maybe even Rodon, but those guys against piecing together Job, Melton, and Framber Valdez. Like, that ultimately becomes the difference. So, it's fun, though, because that's what makes baseball great. A team that completely is what they ought to be, waiting for reinforcements, and another team that is far worse than they ought to be in the Tigers. You have one more. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it could be a rematch, the 4-5 of last year. Yankees, Red Sox, best two out of three. Remember, in the best two out of three, they don't flip home fields. It's one team. It's the higher seed, gets all three games if necessary at home. And right now, Yankees is the 4, Red Sox is the 5. It's very possible. That would be a lot of fun there, late September, early October, whenever that starts. But yes, I do have one more baseball play. I love what the Cubs did. I love what the Cubs did at the deadline. They can hit, they can field. They just needed some pitching, and they got it. I think those guys they got fit like a glove. Kevin Gausman, I know Holmes was bad his first start, and he got roughed up, but those are guys that keep the ball on the ground. Gausman, there's a little positive regression in his numbers, I think, coming. Zephyr Hahn, the reliever from the Angels. Garrett, I think, was a nice little lottery ticket from the Marlins. He's got ability. 15-1 to be the one seed. Yeah. They're only four back in Milwaukee. They play Milwaukee 7 times between now and September 9th. I think the Cubs are live here. That's a really good team, a really dangerous team, and good on both sides of the ball.
I love the bet. I'm smiling because my instinct is this has all the makings of a Willie special where it's a great bet that ends up like a game shy in the end. That's
what wouldn't be the first or last time.
Wouldn't be the first or last. But you're right. They play the Brewers 7 times. Brewers currently on top. Of course, obviously, the Dodgers are flying the ointment. The Braves are flying the ointment. There's others to get by, but that's a nice price. 15-1, you said, to be the number one seed on the Cubbies?
At FanDuel, yeah, 15-1 at FanDuel.
Okay, shop around as always on this. More with Will Hill on the other side. He's got football thoughts. We'll ask him about Kyler Murray starting for the Vikings. I'd like to say a few words about Kyler Murray.
MVP?
Well, I'm not going to say those words, or those letters. But I do think that he's like one of these players that in our mind, people like the instinct is to like sort of giggle. He's a lot better than people think when he's healthy. Question is, can he stay healthy? Coming back, more with Will on A Numbers Game right here at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSIN Pro. Paul Sporer joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He is coming to us from Austin, Texas, but at his heart, he is a Detroit guy, Detroit Tigers fan, first and foremost. You can follow him on Twitter at Sporer. He works at FanGraphs, host of the Sleeper of the Bus podcast. Paulie, good morning.
Good morning, and it is the substation. Just can't see any way it's not, but we don't have to delve into that. I'm here for baseball.
That's right. Wow, substation gaining traction this morning. All right, you called this. Tigers a half game out of the wild card, the third wild card, 2.5 out of the division. They're doing this, aren't they? They're doing this.
Maybe, Gil, but you know what? Their bullpen still sucks. Yes, so I'm pretty angry if I'm being real.
Yeah, it does.
Like it's such a fraudulent run here that I like. I get excited about in the moment each night. Like I had a blast last night watching. And as I'm kind of coming down from it, watching some West Coast games, I get pissed again because that bullpen sucks and Kenley's terrible. I'm sorry. Like, he's just not a closer for a playoff team anymore. And they have no bridge to him. I'll tell you what, if they had a bridge to him and then they just kind of had the old man closing, we've seen this with teams before, right? Their best relievers are the sixth, seventh, eighth guys because that's when the game is won and lost generally. And then they have somebody who can kind of maintain the ninth. If that's what they had, great. But they got a bridge that's on fire, missing every other step to a guy that is broken down. Like, I'm sorry. He just, the way he was spraying the ball last night, I thought we were losing that game 1,000,000%. There was no doubt in my mind with the meltdowns that he's had this year that the Tigers were going to lose. They didn't. But that's the thing. Like, okay, you're going to trade Schuble and Mize. You know, we talk about how I work for the game called Out of the Park Baseball. It's a baseball simulator where you can play general manager. And those are some moves that I probably would have done managing a team, trading Schuble and Mize to get something for next year, you know, being kind of the you know, no feeling sort of guy, you know, in the simulator there. But you know what else I would have done? I'd have gotten some bullpen pieces. Check the waiver wire. Go pick up something, dude. So, you know, I got some love for Scott Harris, but I got some anger, and it really comes down to that bullpen. Tigers look great. They're playing very well. They might get this because the Central isn't great and the AL's been a crapshoot all year. But push come to shove in the playoffs, I just don't see it with the way this bullpen is.
I agree with you about that. I totally agree with you about that. I think they're the opposite of the Red Sox. The Red Sox to me are, if they sneak in, tough
yes.
out.
They're Tigers, major dangerous. Yep.
Tigers, if they sneak in, not a tough out to me.
I can't see it.
Yeah,
I can't.
For many of the reasons you stated. Now, but I just needed you know what? I just needed the last 20 more days, Paul. That's all I need for the Tigers.
Right. And I will give one little thing on the if we sneak in. And I'm a wee guy, so cry about it, folks. I don't care. I know I don't get none of the payroll. I'm none of the things. Shut up. If we sneak in, they will strengthen the bullpen by cutting down the rotation. And that, yes. that will help. It won't fix everything, but it will help. Like if a Jackson Jobe is coming out of the bullpen because they don't want to push his innings too far and everything. Okay. You could see maybe a little something, but I'm with you. Someone like the Red Sox, I'd be much more excited about going into the playoffs than I am my beloved Tigers.
Jackson Jobe hitting triple digits on the gun in his return yep. from Tommy John. But like guys like Melton, it's such a house of cards, Ace. Right? Like, it's just, if you look at the fan
whoa,
graphs.
Whoa,
we disagree
whoa.
On Melton.
Some
of those underlying numbers are due for some regression. So, I'm just hoping
easy
it lasts.
Easy on my ace there, killer. That's my guy. I truly believe that he is a future ace. But I say future because I agree. Not fully formed yet, but you got to go look at the game logs, Gil. He started off a little bit slow. And I know what you're talking about with, like, the BABIP. The BABIP is, like, my weight. Right now, he's running like a 150, 60 BABIP or something. And that will go up. 100%. Totally agree. Tigers defense has been playing a lot better over the last couple months, though. That doesn't sustain a sub 200 BABIP. I agree with you there. But the core skills, the strikeouts and walks, have greatly improved as Melton's season has gone. And even when the strikeouts weren't there, he was going 6-7 innings a pop. So he was kind of making up for it with volume and making sure that they didn't have to get into that terrible bullpen. I'm just totally in the bag for Melton. I truly believe he's a future one. So I had to push back on you a little bit there. But I'm with you on the BABIP. I'll give you the BABIP.
If you had to make a bet then on your Tigers, what's the bet? Make playoffs plus 155, win division plus 270. What's the best bet on them?
I think I'd go for the division at that point, right? If you think they're going to make the playoffs, just go for the bigger number at the division there and kind of go for that. Don't get too caught up in anything with pennant or World Series. Cause like I said, I really can't see it. You never know when you get in October. I understand. But no, division odds is probably where I'd look if I were going to go on the Tigers.
Who is the most, what team is the most disappointing in all of baseball? And can the Mariners turn it around?
Before the yeah, game. Thank you. Because yeah, I mean, you know me too well. Like it's a 1,000,000,000% them. I don't know, man. I've been buying in on them for years now, as I believe you have too. You know, seeing this talent and thinking that they could really make a gigantic run, and they're either running in place or backsliding, as we've seen now recently here. And I just don't really get it. I think when we look at some of the other teams that have disappointed this year, we can kind of see the reasoning. When I look at them, I still don't really get it. Okay, Cal, sure. One player does not a team make, though. So even if you just kind of like plenty of teams that are doing well this year have a big failure somewhere or another. Look at the Yankees still hanging around and being competitive. And they have the worst offense in baseball. Well, actually, second worst. You know who's worst? Seattle. Since June 1st when Judge went out. So I don't know, man. Like, I don't know that they can. They have the talent, but I don't know what the heck is going on with them in Seattle. I'm starting to lose my faith after kind of being on their train for the last, like I said, several years at this point.
Who wins the American League pennant in the end?
Probably a healthy Yankees, but so that's a little bit of a cop-out because I don't know, is Judge going to be healthy and all that? Because that pitching is awesome. The offense absolutely stinks out loud right now, but it's because they're hobbled. If the Judge and company come back, that totally flips on a dime. So I have to go with the Yankees as the favorite right now. I love that Red Sox team, though. You brought them up earlier about if they get in, they're hot. I still really do like them, but I would go healthy Yankees.
And are we just ignoring the Rays? Is that bad of us to do in the end? Or you don't buy it?
It is and it isn't, because they're kind of like Milwaukee, where their stuff doesn't necessarily track in the playoffs, because I think they're more built for the long haul. They don't have a lot of power. The pitching can help, but can they score in the playoffs? I'm not sure they can.
Paul, love you. Thank you so much. Paul Sporer, everybody.
Thanks, guys. Take care, guys.
Nick Whalen joins us, the co-host of Prop Points, Jeff Erickson, Nick Whalen, every day after the show. And Kelly, you were saying off air what professionals these two guys are.
They just as far as the inner VEASAN communications go,
yes.
Nick Whalen and Jeff Erickson just make it about as smooth and easy as possible. As far as getting them on the show, what they bring to the show, just pros. Love working with pros.
Without further ado, because the previous ado wasn't enough, Nick Whalen joins us now. At Whalen, substitute the letter L with the number one on Twitter. Nick, good morning.
Kelly, appreciate the kind words, man. You know, Jeff and I, we're hard hat guys. We're lunch pail guys. You know, we're just trying to pick up 3 yards every down, move the chains, not trying to do anything fancy, but appreciate the plug. Appreciate you guys having me back on the show. And I wish there was some NBA that we could talk about, guys. But the big news this week is, I guess, the schedule release, which we kind of already know the NBA schedule. It doesn't really have the same fanfare as the NFL. But we're getting closer, Kelly, to be able to justify talking a little bit more NBA on these airwaves.
I made Gil sit through 8 minutes of most improved player conversation 2 days ago. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah. It was riveting.
I'm battling with Michael Cohen every day trying to get NBA on our show.
Riveting. No, it was great, actually.
It's an interesting market right
now. Not to make fun of you, you do have a little bit of NBA scheduling fever. What do you like so much about it? Did you notice anything?
Oh, I mean, look, I'm just desperate for any kind of NBA storylines this time of year. We're getting the groups, we're getting the official dates for the in-season tournament. Those have started to trickle out on Twitter today. As we were reminded when we were talking off air, by the way, they have moved the championship game for the in-season tournament to Hinkle Fieldhouse, which is, of course, where Butler plays, if you are a college basketball fan.
What are we doing?
I know for you guys, you know, that's a tough blow taking it out of Vegas, but I think this is actually a really cool move by the NBA to play in this iconic, you know, much smaller, famous arena.
Are the semis still in Vegas?
I believe so.
Okay.
I'm going to have to do some research on that. I know for sure the championship game is at Hinkle.
Well, as you know, it is a long.
There's no way, right? They got to be playing those at home stadium.
Yeah, I was going to say they're going to do the semis here and then move it out of Vegas.
That would be quite the trip.
It is a long-standing, a numbers game tradition that I take the entire crew to the finals of the NBA Cup. I mean, this has been going on for how many years now, Kelly, that we've done this?
One
year. I mean, that's enough.
Okay, yeah, confirmed. Semifinals at home teams' arenas and then going to Butler for the championship. Okay.
So no Vegas.
No Vegas.
Okay. What
the sucks. Hell? It's a great venue.
Sorry, crew. Brutal. I guess it's Texas Roadhouse or bust from now on. That's it. That's all we get. Nick, let's go to the National Football League. We were talking about, we did a whole segment. We're just riffing through different training camp developments. What has caught your attention?
Well, there was a note that just came through like 5 minutes ago, guys, that Emeka Ebuka limped off the field at Buccaneers practice earlier today. Oh, still kind of waiting on reports as to exactly what happened. Sounded like he got, quote, rolled up on while taking an end around. You never want to get rolled up on, certainly not during training camp heading into the preseason. So that is certainly something to monitor. You know, I've talked a lot on our show about just the black box that is the NFC South. You know, I still think Tampa Bay is probably the highest floor team. I think if I had to bet a team to win that division, it would be the Buccaneers, but obviously you don't feel great about it. And, you know, looking at this through a fantasy lens, I would say no wide receiver has really risen over the last few months in the way that Emeka Ebuka has. So if you are a fantasy player, that is something now to keep a very close eye on. You know, outside of that, We get six preseason games tomorrow night, and it does feel like, on paper at least, we're going to see more starters than we typically would. Matt LaFleur said the Packers are going to play starters for at least a series or two. So I'm very excited to see what this revamped or at least consolidated wide receiver room looks like for Green Bay, especially Matthew Golden. I think we'll see a lot of Marshawn Lloyd, who has basically been injured for the first 2 years of his career. So we'll get kind of our first extended look at him tomorrow night. And then all eyes, of course, will be on Cardinals Raiders, where we'll see Fernando Mendoza. Yes. I don't know if he's going to start the game, but it sounds like they're going to try to get him a series or two with some starters. And then the debut of Jeremiah Love, who is currently the odds on favorite for Rookie of the Year.
Speaking of awards, you have some thoughts on Offensive Player of the Year.
I think we talked about Offensive Rookie of the Year potentially, but Offensive Player of the Year is also completely wide open. I think you could argue that, you know, maybe I'm just being a prisoner in the moment, but like the skill position talent right now at the top of the league feels as deep as it's been in terms of the number of star running backs, the number of star receivers that you would put in that category. I think you could even, you know, suggest that Brock Bowers perhaps has a seat at the table in the Offensive Player of the Year conversation. And you know, what makes some of this difficult is that, you know, like I would love to bet Jahmyr Gibbs at 6-1. I also think Amon-Ra St. Brown is a relatively safe bet because of how high the floor is every year. But those guys, of course, play in the same offense. You guys know I love Jared Goff as a late round fantasy quarterback this year. So it'll be interesting to see kind of where that credit ends up being doled out within some of these offenses. But if you look a little bit further down the board, Jonathan Taylor at 22-1 is a player I like. I think that's a reasonable value. I think the Colts probably need him to be elite, maybe more so than some of these other teams need their running back to be elite, with the exception of Bijan Robinson. But a lot of changes for the Colts, a lot of questions as far as what Daniel Jones is going to look like to begin the year. And I mean, we forget Jonathan Taylor was on the fringes of the MVP conversation three quarters of the way through last season. Now, I think we know he's probably not going to win it because he's a running back, but if he can recapture, you know, that same form that we saw early last season, I think 22-1 is a pretty reasonable value.
You mentioned Jeremiah Love as the favorite and Offensive Rookie of the Year. You have some deeper cuts that you like, deeper album cuts that you like there more so?
Yeah, I just think this is, you know, a really interesting race, because much like last year, I don't think it's going to take a historic season by any of these rookies to win the award. You don't have to be Ja'Marr Chase or Odell Beckham or Saquon Barkley hitting the ground running and pushing for All Pro right away. I mean, we saw Tet McMillan win the award last year, and he had to scratch a claw's way just to break 1,000 yards. So the issue is that we have a lot of talent, but starting with Jeremiah Love in Arizona, and especially a lot of these receivers that we saw at round one and round two, a lot of that elite rookie talent is concentrated on bad teams or teams with bad quarterback play. So it's like you want to love Carnell Tate. You want to love someone like Jordan Tyson, but, you know, reasonably, you would still have questions about Cam Ward and Tyler Shuck. Jeremiah Love, to me, is probably the best talent in the class. The Arizona Cardinals also have a win total of 3.5. They are projected to score the fewest points in the NFL, so you wonder how much that works against him. One name I will throw out to you guys, though, at wide receiver, I think we have to keep an eye on DeShon Stribling for the 49ers. He is down to 20-1, so hopefully you jumped on this when he was like 60-1 a couple weeks ago, but reports out of Niners camp are that he has been the best receiver on this roster. Ricky Pearsall's out for the year. I'm out on Mike Evans being an elite player at this point in his career. Christian Kirk might be cooked. Deebo Samuel feels like he's in like the Russell Westbrook phase of his career. So if this offense is as good as we think it could be, as well coached as it always is, I think Stribling at 20-1 is a name to monitor.
If you weren't going to bring him up, I was, because that was obviously the big fallout from the Pearsall thing. And Stribling's the best wide receiver on the roster in training camp, as I was saying earlier, because both Deebo and Mike Evans look so slow. My God.
There was a tough video of those guys last week.
Oh, God. It's like, oh, you're going right. Oh, you are going right. I'm still here with you. All right. And then fantasy, I know you and Jeff do a whole bunch of it on prop points, but what is it? It's Jahmyr Gibbs and Bijan at the top, and then everybody else at that point. They're 1-2 in whatever order.
In just about every draft, yeah. But if you're in full PPR, I think it's totally justifiable to take Ja'Marr Chase as well. I would say that's the big three. It's been Bijan as the 1-1 most of the offseason, but at a lot of sites, Gibbs has overtaken him within the last few weeks.
All right. Prop points right after us. Jeff Erickson, Nick Whalen here at the network. Thank you so much, Nick. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Nick Whalen coming back on A Numbers Game with Toddy Wishnev next. Rich Sports 1981, Wishnev Wednesday. The worst segment of ANG always reminds me to take my trash out. Pause. Just kidding. Haters gonna hate on Todd. Keep crushing it, Todd. Boudin boy. I respect paying the bills, but that department of we don't listen to the commercials.
Also, I don't know what that. Yeah, I saw your tweet. I don't. We don't
hear the commercials.
Programming the commercials depending on where you're listening.
Ace DeCardona, which panelist was the motherless? See you next Tuesday. Lying about and taking shots at Todd. Completely unacceptable. Todd is a nice, brilliant guy who is crushing and helping people. I'm telling you, from yesterday, from the segment I did yesterday on it till now, nothing but nonstop support for Toddy Wishnev. I don't even know if he went and listened to it. It is the great Todd Wishnev, the star of Wishnev Wednesdays in the flesh, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Well, not in the flesh, that means he'd be here. But he's courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line from Pittsburgh, PA. Toddy, good morning. How you doing, man?
How you doing, Gilly? What's going on? By the way, I would say there's a fundamental misunderstanding in this whole discussion of whether you can get the number or not.
Please.
If you understand how in-game markets work, it is not like a pre-game market where, you know, the game can be plus five and then all the sharps come in on a side and Dr. Bob releases and now it's plus three. My friends, if you watch the in-game markets, they are based on the closing number and the algorithm. There is not that much difference between all the different books' in-game numbers out there. So you, for those who say that you only get a small percentage, it's just factually incorrect.
Yes, it is.
Now, I can't look at that many books myself. I only have like three or four books that I can still do this with. And those books are not that different. Once in a while, yeah. Okay, I do a lot of first half with like 8 minutes left in the first half, 12 minutes left in the first half college basketball betting. You might see 72.5 at one book, 72.5 at another book, minus 114, minus 121, 72.5, minus 108 somewhere else, maybe 71.5, minus 130 somewhere else. But that's pretty close to 72.5 because you're paying more VIG, right? So that's almost all of them are going to be running the same numbers. Now, what people are saying is very often it takes me time to make the bet, decide I want to make the bet at the commercial. Remember, there's only 2 minutes. And a lot of times you're 30 seconds behind because of the TV delay already. So maybe there's only a minute and a half. Now you've got to decide what to do. I've got to go make the bet. It may be at a kiosk. You know, if I'm sitting at Rivers, that takes time. I got to come back, post the bet. Now, sometimes the game has just started or has gone 30 seconds by the time I get my post in. So let's say I say over 71.5 first half with 8 minutes to go. And the first possession is empty. Guess what? You're going to get better than 71.5.
That's right.
And if they hit a three, if they hit a three in the first 10 seconds, you're going to get worse. That's how in-game markets work. So people like Chance Copperpot, who gets a huge percentage of my plays, sometimes at better numbers than me, is just watching the market. So if he sees it come over his transom that I'm playing over 71.5 first half and it bumps to 73.5 because they just hit a three to start the possession, he waits and sometimes it gets away from him. He can't do that bet. Sometimes it comes back. He might get 70.5 because they might have a minute that there was empty from the 6 minute mark to the 5 minute mark. All of a sudden he's got a better number than me. And he oftentimes wins and I lose and I get angry and start cursing him out that he's getting a better number than me. So this whole nonsense that you can only get 5 to 10% of the plays is just ridiculous. If you would like to continue to believe it, believe it. But you show your fundamental lack of understanding of the in-game markets if that is your position.
Well, well done. First of all, well done. Well done, Todd. I think you are actually diagnosing the nicest part of that, which is fundamental lack of understanding. I think worse than that, it's just, what did you say on one of the very first Wishnev Wednesdays back in the day at the South Point? Human beings, worst invention ever, unquote. Which I think
I can't stand human beings.
Yeah, a lot of people.
And I can't wait till AI wipes out all of humanity.
Okay.
That will be a good day.
Okay. Now we're really getting to the crux of things with Todd. But I'm just saying, people suffer in the gambling community, maybe more exaggerated than others. They just suffer from this. If they didn't get in on it, let me figure out a way to make myself feel better about this. So they take shots. It's just ridiculous.
Anyway. And the guy at the bet bash saying, "Oh, that guy can't possibly win. You see how fat he is?"
Exactly. Yeah.
By the way, fatness does not stop you from being good at sports gambling.
That's right.
Now, it may stop you from hitting every tennis shot that you want to hit because you're too fat to get to the ball. But it doesn't necessarily stop what is essentially a sit in your chair activity.
Well said again.
Yeah.
Please, Todd, go back and listen to my rant yesterday. Okay.
Oh, I did. I listened to it, and okay. I thank you very much for ranting for me. I appreciate it.
I hadn't even known that you listened to it. All right. WNBA. You had an interesting point in a little group chat this morning, which is the interesting difference between pre-flop first half numbers, totals, that is, and second half totals. What do you mean?
Okay. So, you know, in college basketball, it's fundamental where you get like you get half the number minus four, half the number plus four in the first and second halves. In the NBA, you get different situations, first half, second half. So you might have a 200 total. It's not 100 first half, 100 second half. It's all based on how the teams have played first half, second half. Now, the WNBA used to be even. So if you had a 180 total, it'd be 90 first half, 90 second half, because there weren't that many opportunities at the end where there were going to be fouls because of the 24 second clock, et cetera, et cetera. However, I've noticed this year it's reverted to an NBA style where you will not see on a 180, a 90 first half and a 90 second half. You might once in a while see it, but very often you're seeing 87 first half, 93 second half, or vice versa. You might see 95 first half, 85 second half. And I assume what's happening there is people are tracking these teams to see how they do in the first half versus the second half. And that's why you're seeing these other numbers. Now, you can use, because it doesn't used to be like that. Like, I've been betting WNBA for a number of years, even before Caitlin Clark came into the league. You know, there was a league even before Caitlin Clark got in the WNBA. Get out of here. No one would believe it. But there actually was a league, and I used to bet it. And it was 90 in the first half, 90 in the second half on a 180. It is no longer that way. And this can be something you can theoretically work in your favor for in-game. And here's what I mean. Let's say you're watching a game and it's halftime and it was I'll give you an example. Last night, Sparks Mercury, very high-paced game, 47 first half possessions is a lot of possessions in a WNBA game, which typically might have 42 possessions, 41 possessions, 43 possessions. 47's a lot in a WNBA game. The first half of this game was 47-44. They didn't shoot that well, so they only got to 91. Now, the way they had run this game was the first half was supposed to be higher. The second half was supposed to be lower. I might be off on that, and I'm saying the opposite, but I'm pretty sure I'm correct on this. The point that I want to make is you can now take that third quarter number, because you're going to get a third quarter is going to be about half of that second half number, and you can play that number based on the fact you're maybe even in the first half, right? Based on the fact, scratch that, I'm sorry. If you're going for a full game bet in the second quarter of a game, and you know that that second half is going to be a lower scoring second half based on the market, you might get a better number because you're going to get a higher paced game still in the second half. I don't know if what I'm saying is making sense.
No, it does. Okay.
But the point is, and it doesn't really matter the exact examples because I didn't do a good job with that example. But the point is, like last night, third quarter, I wanted to play over in that Mercury game because just in case the game got out of hand or got too tight in the fourth quarter, I didn't want to put myself in a position where the fourth quarter could whack my bet. And that's what's nice about WNBA and quarter betting is that the third quarter is likely to play very similar to the first half, whereas the fourth quarter, anything can happen. You know, you might have a blowout. You might have a close game that can, you know, lower scoring and stuff like that. So I guess my point is, other than my horrible examples, which I did a terrible job on, the point is know what the second half line is going to be at halftime. Because if you know that, you can play that in your favor. Does that make any sense?
There it is. Yes, it does. Todd, Olivia Miles is plus 550 to win MVP. Is there any chance she could win it over Asia Wilson? Any chance?
You know what? She's so exciting to watch. Unbelievable player. I mean, she might deserve it. I don't know how these voters go. I mean, Asia Wilson is really amazing.
Yeah, she's minus.
So she's very, very difficult to stop.
Todd wants Olivia Miles, it's
a lot of fun.
Todd wants AI to wipe out humanity. That's my takeaway. Thank you, Todd. Appreciate it. Wishnev Wednesdays. Toddy Wishnev, everybody.